Our guest today is Mark Tomlinson. If you work in performance testing, probably he doesn't need an introduction because he is a very well-known speaker and podcaster and YouTuber. I really like everything he shares because it is very well explained. I learned a lot from his videos. I really recommend to follow him. And in our conversation I will share with you today, we discussed about something he has been working lately that he calls performacology. It's a word that is kind of difficult for me to pronounce, but I think I did it well. And he will explain what it means in this conversation. I hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome to Quality Sense Podcast. Mark, how are you doing? It's always very, very nice to see you and talk to you. I'm really glad we can make it. And thank
yes,
you for
welcome.
Thank you for accepting the invitation and welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's my first time on the Quality Sense podcast. I'm very, very excited to be here.
Not the first time in a Quality Sense related activity, because you were speaking at the conference last year here in Uruguay, which I really appreciate. It was the first time we met in person, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a critical, that trip turned out to be very inspiring for me. And it was taking that particular talk that I did at the Quality, which was a really exciting conference to be all together again and really well attended. It was fun to be in front of a full room, full audience. It was pretty cool. But it was very inspiring on what we're going to talk about today. So ecology, sustainable engineering, and just being a better practitioner of that stuff as a performance engineer, for sure.
It was really, we had a great time during the conference, but also in the different activities we did with the speakers and many other people. And I remember having a few conversations that you mentioned later on that impacted the way you wanted to perform the talk, or that you did some adjustment in the last minute or something like that. Can you share some of what happened there?
Yeah, absolutely. It was meeting, I believe it was the Abstract chief people person. It was Vera and I when you arrive in a foreign country, you meet somebody and they're just very warm personality. And we rode on the bus when we went out to the beach to Punta Arista, I think it was. We just got to talking about the landscapes. Obviously, just being able to tour and see the country is beautiful. Sort of fantastic agricultural countryside, and then some fires or some past fires. We just got to talking about ecology, and she mentioned this visual that was with kids in Uruguay. When you bring kids up in school, they learn this sort of the way you're connected to everything else, your community, your family, your community, the planet, and sort of everything. And I had this visual of these sort of rainbow kinds of things. And I think she even mentioned like the kids have to draw, they use a drawing exercise to learn how everything that they do is potentially connected to other parts of their community and their family. And I thought, you know, that's something that we don't exactly think about. I wasn't thinking about in a very inspired way around the work we do as performance engineers. And it was, yeah, it was really important. Of course, Vera and her colleague do a podcast called The Everything Else Podcast. And the light bulb really went off for me that it's like, yeah, I've been doing this great work in like teaching people about CPU and disk and memory and network and how to optimize their applications and how to do this great performance stuff for response time. And I'm like, response time is the little thing. What about the everything else, you know? And so it was it really connected for me in a really exciting way. And so making some changes for the talk was to just mention things more appropriately about energy consumption, about heat and cooling, because heat is a major part of efficient computing. If you paid for a processor that can do amazing things at full speed, the minute it starts to get too hot for that processor, things start to run much slower. And eventually you're like, well, this doesn't work very well. I'll just buy more hardware. I'll throw more hardware at the problem, or in the cloud I'll do. So we start taking on these compensatory behaviors that are actually a little bit ignorant of how much power am I actually using? Yeah. How much heat am I actually generating? And then how much cooling do I need to also consume energy to cool the heat I'm creating? And do we end up in this vicious downward spiral into a very inefficient and unsustainable state? And that was kind of the genesis of, like, I actually felt quite guilty for giving that talk in many in my history, and not talking enough about sustainability and not talking about heat and cooling. So I just kind of started adding some things into that talk in a very inspired way, and then ended up having great talks after, great conversations with the attendees afterwards about gaming. Like, that really dawned on me that, like, gamers are overclocking. Like, they understand energy and heat and cooling. Like, there's a whole generation of computing in gaming that they already know about all these concepts. And they're like, yeah, I built an amazing gaming rig, and then my power bill went off the charts, and my room is super hot. And they're like, oh, yeah. It's like, it's not very fun to be, you know, sweating while you're gaming. Maybe for some people, but I thought it was really funny. That was very inspiring in that class. And then giving that talk, and then coming back from the trip, I just kind of went into brainstorming the perform ecology and the rest of everything that I'm kind of inspired to do this year.
Because what I understand for what you say is, like, we as developer testers, or people also consuming software, we are all the time having an impact, a negative impact on the planet, on the ecosystem, by using these systems, because the system uses different resources that need cooling, more energy, and everything like that. Yeah. By teaching performance testing and how to optimize systems, I think you have been doing a contribution without mentioning it explicitly, right? Because if you help people optimize their systems and consume less energy, there is an impact there. But maybe making it explicit, you add another motivation to pay attention to this sort of thing, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But I don't want to sort of take, I don't know, it's not about credit or something, but I think in those situations, you are guided maybe even implicitly by your intentions or the context for your intention. So if my intention is to make response time fast to serve, let's say, e-commerce, to make sure the shopping cart experience is great, and you're successful with a sort of narrow scope or a narrow focus on, well, we need to, we need this report to be done in an hour. We need the shopping cart checkout to go fast and conversion. We need the homepage to load faster. We need a stream to be higher quality and consume more bandwidth. You will, your definition of success, or your definition of done as a performance practitioner, might be, is the site fast? We're done. Great. And you end maybe that project. We achieved those goals. And it's the answer to how did you achieve success that gets disconnected. Oh, well, if the business is doing supporting 1,000 users a day doing shopping, and we needed this much hardware, we want to grow the business by 3x by the end of the year. We're just going to buy more hardware. So you may optimize something, and sure, it's great that it's more efficient, but the other behaviors that happen as a result of your success can lead other people who are not performance practitioners to just be, great, well, now we know what we know. We can stop thinking about the planet. We can stop thinking about our net zero carbon footprint. We stop thinking about efficiency. And then, you know, Fede, like, a couple more changes, iterations, some code creeps in, some other, you know, uses creep in, and things start to get inefficient, or they get slow, but they don't get slow enough to make you go back and do that project and retune the system. So to me, the two aspects I think I'm after for every practitioner, definitely a performance practitioner, is this is something that should be part of every aspect of your tuning. Like, I know I can tune this to get it done faster, but it'll chew up more CPU. All right. Energy and cooling should be right there in my metrics. And it's also something that you don't, it doesn't end. Like, the planet doesn't end. The human race and the species that we love on this planet, all the life that's here, and like, it doesn't end. So our job in terms of having a computer or a process or a website or an app, it never ends. Like, your work never ends. And so don't think that ecology or sustainability is never ending. That's why there's an irony in the name sustainability. Can we sustain what we're doing for the long-term benefit of everyone?
You mentioned having those metrics, but is there a way to measure this impact? Because I would like to have a graph with the CPU, the response time, and also the footprint on the impact on the energy consumption or eating and everything. Is there a way?
Yeah, it does exist, and it's creeping. I'd say think of it in layers. If you think about sort of green IT or green computing, there's also in architecture and in sort of urban design or civil engineering pursuits, planning, city planning, urban planning. There's a lot of stuff around like green architecture and green compliance, using green materials, creating like living roofs. There's all sorts of things in the physical world of architecture and building and sort of urban ways. But in the ecologically, also in rural areas, there's, you know, soil conservation and waterway management, all sorts of stuff. So we know how to think about these things in other disciplines. And so at a very high level, the green computing or like green IT, there's one of the great resources I went to is in the States, it's the University of Michigan. It has a green IT fact sheet. And they did a really nice job of sort of listing how, when it comes to IT, the green IT translates all those things into what we're doing. It's a very good high level. But again, when major companies, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, we've created some very, you know, beautiful looking websites around their green initiatives, but they're all very high level. To me, they're very detached from the working practitioner around performance. And so part of the idea was that we could actually bring this down to earth in different levels and start there's a green initiative about offsetting our carbon footprint. And you can even monitor it in Dynatrace at a very, very high level, using an algorithm that abstracts some presumptions about the different things. Contrast that to there's something called the Kepler, Kepler, Kepler. The Kepler open source project in Kubernetes takes energy stats from your Kubernetes pods running and like puts them into the Prometheus instance. So you can start monitoring the energy consumption, the CPU ticks, because when you're running in a hypervisor and you're abstracted, you can count how many CPU ticks, how much the efficiency of that pod. And so that was another following the Kepler project has been very, very good to see. And just even going through the conversations in their pull requests, like what debates they're having around stuff, is actually really enlightening. So it's Kepler, the Kepler sustainable-computing-io. It's on GitHub. Look for Kepler, Kepler. That's a great place to do that.
In the notes. But there are different levels. Now I was thinking that maybe there are different decision points of the whole team. For instance, when you are deciding where to host your application, maybe you want to host in a data center in the West Coast, the East Coast, Europe, or different places, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe if we have some labels like this is A or AA or AAA or like indicating the level of efficiency of this particular data center will be another important way or easy way to make an impact. And also it's a business driver, like the ones designing the data centers. Maybe they would say, I want to have more people deciding to use my data center, so I will make it compliant to certain certification or something. Is there something like some initiative like that going on right now?
That definitely. I think the decisions for, well, in the capitalist world of big tech, obviously they're making decisions to save money and or boost their profit margins on compute. So if you're Facebook and you're moving, you're building a $100 million project or larger in Iceland near some kind of a geothermal heat source that you can turn into electricity with also some prevailing very cool winds, you get free cooling and free power. But what about the people of Iceland? You know, are they happy that there's a giant Facebook data center? Maybe they are happy that there's a, maybe there's tax things, maybe they bring jobs, you know, there's other things that make it sustainable from that point. So I think that's at a very high level market driven decision based on those companies. And we haven't quite made empowered companies outside of their own research. In the States, we have recently, just with the administration, there's in different countries, of course, they also have like sort of green tax rebates. Like if your company gets green certified and you reduce your carbon footprint, then you can, like, it's actually financially beneficial to the company to operate in a very ecological way. And so, but again, it's sort of that there's an algorithm to it that you and I, as performance practitioners, we're not changing what we do yet. We're not totally incorporating, hey, I have an SLO for energy consumption. I have a SLA contractually for heat output. We don't have those kinds of hard and fast requirements. We're pretty good about response time. We definitely know when the hardware is overtaxed from CPU, and we're pretty good about tuning things. We don't necessarily have product owners or the business that says we need to do all of these features on this release, and we need to reduce the energy consumption by 10%. Like that, at the practitioner level, I'm not teaching, and I have not seen those things come in as acceptance criteria in our work. So yeah, that's the hard part.
Is there something we should be doing at educational level as well? Like when we teach performance, also how to pay attention to these things?
I think we love calculations, right? And this is the thing for me that just coming to this new within the last 6 months to really see where green computing and sustainable engineering and these different organizations. And again, I'm not trying to be insulting at all, but they're very high level. They're trying to get the message out there. I mean, that's a crucial part of awareness is a crucial part of doing this kind of work. The getting down into the nuts and bolts practitioner wise. I think we love calculations. So being able to calculate heat consumption as a proponent of how much energy do these memory modules make and how much CPU consumes how much energy at what size. And the minute we can pull in more metrics as performance nerds, give me another algorithm. Oh, there, I have more data. I have a thing I can graph. I can see it. I mean, if you can see it, you can react to it. You can tune it. I think that's the exciting part at the practitioner level is to say, have you guys ever watched the energy consumption when on a mobile device, if the mobile device starts to get hot, well, heat equals activity or consumption. Oh, wait a minute. Like this is the thing that the gamers get. Like if I want really fast frames per second, polygons per second, my GPU got too hot and started to throttle and then my game was over. I lost the game. So it's really cool to just see that excitement. So I think we would do well when we teach CPU percent usage, when we teach about garbage collection, we teach about ETL processes and tuning, you know, extracts or transforming calculations and data sets. We should be teaching, have you guys ever watched what the heat does? Have you ever understanding the T delta, you know, heat in the front of a server to the back of the server and how much heat is exhausted and heat removal. Like that's, it gets really fun from a calculations perspective. And then the visual aspect of it is one more thing that you can see as we ramp up the load. Oh, the energy and heat consumption, and then the cooling demand coming out. That gets very exciting. I think that's very exciting for any performance nerd.
Is adding more variables to the function that we try to optimize, because we typically try to optimize some resources, response time, but now we should also try to optimize the heating and energy consumption of the different components.
Do you remember, there's an author who used to work for Sosta, Tammy Everts. Have you ever met Tammy? She has a great book, I think is very straight up, Time is Money.
Yeah.
And it talks about response time conversion rates. And I think we do a great job of, hey, this, we need to optimize response times. We can graph response times. And then it's like, oh, that CPU disk memory, I'm the business user. I wrote the acceptance criteria about response time. And then you kind of had to coach me to think about how many actual users were going to be on the site. Oh yeah, that's throughput. Okay. And then the minute you get into the physical realms, CPU, disk, memory, network, etc., that's like, oh, I don't know about that. And that's where I think the practitioner level awareness around the physical aspects of power, cooling, and energy and that will marry up eventually with response time. And suddenly it's like, yes, we want that response time, but maybe not at the cost of the planet or the next future generation of people that have to live or the next, you know. So I think that could happen. I envision there being like a website that says, you know, apologies for our 1 second response time. We're trying to save the planet. We're trying to be ecologically minded. The other thing that Vera and I talked about was, you know, if in certain countries you go, it's mandated, you go into the fast food or a restaurant and they put the estimated calories on each of the food items. So when to your point about service providers, data centers and other things, when you're going through your a la carte menu, you could see how many calories. Well, I can't have that many calories. I can't have that many. Well, let's choose this one. Well, I'm wondering if there's also, you know, apps in the app store will have an energy rating of some kind that would be like, oh, I want to use that app, but.
But you just brought up an interesting point. Why do fast food chain show you in the cart, or all the restaurants show you in the cart different calories? Because there is a law.
I think there is some regulation, I think, and it may be very local legislation. I'm not exactly sure. It could be also something came from the top down, because I see it in major chains. And then once it catches on with enough people that, hey, this is something, you know, like anything that gets adopted in a great societal sense. Oh, hey, now I went to a restaurant and they don't put the, now you're the weird guy that doesn't put the calories on the menu. And it's like, I don't necessarily want to go eat there. Or it may taste great, but I'm going to regret it, you know, in my diet or my health or something. So there's that movement, I think, in different countries, much like smoking laws, cigarette smoking laws, or other types of regulation that relate to public health. There may be some corollaries there that we could look at. But yeah, I think in some places there were a law that says you have to put the calories on there.
Yeah, but I think this could be also improved or promoted with the approach of the accessibility or the GDPR in Europe. We need to protect the data. I don't care if your business goals are not aligned with this. This is like a must, and the same for accessibility, because again, there is no clear business goal that drives you to take these type of decisions. Maybe a few people are minded about the ecology and the impact on the planet, but not everyone. So the way to ensure that we all take care of this important aspect of the planet and everything is by imposing some regulations on that, right?
Yeah, and it might take that, but obviously we want to trust people to try to do a better than they are, I think, doing a better job. The real thing for me that was inspiring to me is that you and I, when we do performance tests and we're producing information, diagnostic information, we're digging in and saying, hey, this function, this component is really not performing very well. And we try to influence the minds of a developer or an architect who came up with that component. Oh, I think we can do it this way. And we're really, all we're trying to do is bring heat, energy, cooling into their thinking when they're like, oh, I think I can do it this way. Mostly they're just thinking about data and logic. But and then you start running it on the CPU and you're like, oh, that wasn't a very good idea. Okay, then I'll optimize the bad idea. And really, to do performance engineering really well, you're influencing the idea before it becomes code. And so if we can influence developers to think, yeah, I can't do that because that's just going to consume too much heat. Maybe, and a lot of developers are gamers. So they're like, huh, if I'm trying to set up my own gaming rig, I don't want to do that. That's going to be too much heat, you know, something like that. So that's part of the idea, is that we need to infect the code to be optimized. And you have to get into the minds of those engineers before they come up with the ideas for the components.
So one of the questions I have for you is that how we as software testers, performance engineers, or whatever role we have, can influence and can do something about it. And maybe it's by doing this. It's like by talking about how important it is when we are defining the requirements, the SLOs, and different things.
Yeah, I think so. I think it starts with people like me. It starts with people like you, where if you have an audience or you have people who you're lucky enough to have them listen to you, start integrating these ideas, come up with those kind of fun graphs, come up with the metrics, and then come up with unique ways to communicate the possibilities of, hey, if we write things differently, we can use more energy, use less energy. We can use less cooling. We can do this with less CPU. And that's exciting. Maybe even make a competition of some kind. Sometimes certain teams like to compete with one another on who's the most ecological. There are some green scorings. You'll see sort of carbon footprint and some other things, like the Kepler product is a great way to get started doing that. Along with your load tests, just in our load test results, make some inferences, publish the algorithm. We know 70% CPU on this number of cores and this model of machine consumes this much energy. All the stats are all the met numbers or the specifications for CPU, memories, hardware in the big players on the big platforms of hardware. They're all out there. So you could go build the model that says if you're on this type of hardware, it equals this. There's a couple great companies out there that do that. TeamQuest was one of them. They're still around. CA has the old Hyperformix stuff. Those algorithms are still out there.
So you can estimate from your consumption, from your CPU consumption and resources, how much energy you are consuming.
And I think we'll see it also in the cloud providers already giving that information. Again, with something like Kepler, you own the Kubernetes cluster. You can grab that information and pull it into your metrics right out of Prometheus. But if, let's say, I believe some of the cloud providers have to publish for this class of virtual machine, here's the energy consumption and the carbon footprint for that particular usage of that machine. And so, I think we just need to do the work to find new ways to incorporate the metrics, include that in the results that we publish, even if no one's asking for it. It's just like, this is how we can do this. I think that's a good start.
I'd like to take a moment to thank the people at Abstracta for sponsoring and helping me to create this podcast. Abstracta is a company fully dedicated to software testing and software quality that can help you and help your company to push the quality of your products and processes to the next level. Mark, in order to wrap up this conversation, because I know we can keep talking for hours.
People will have to come to Chile. to just have the long-term conversation with us, right?
That's a good suggestion, yeah.
That's right.
So can you tell us more about your new initiative, Pharmacology? Is that right?
I apologize for choosing such a weird mashup name that would be hard to say for anyone.
I will learn it.
Yes, Pharmacology.
Okay.
Pharmacology. And it literally was... a fake name. I had, you know, on title slides at the end of talks, you had to put your title, and I never had a title. So there's like the performancier, like a romantic, there's the performinator, which would be like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Austria, the performinator. The performance, I had a couple other performance ones, I said, but then I put up their pharmacologist on one of the, and somebody was like, hey, that's great. And I'm like, all right. So it just stuck. But honestly, it's given birth from Perf Bites, as everyone might know me and James and Leandro. I mean, the founder for performance specific podcasting media present, you know, like Perf Bites is still kind of the birthplace of it all. But really, it was the Whopper in Uruguay that made me thinking pharmacology, to your pronunciation, is also ecology. That was the sort of sustainable inspiration I had in that conversation with Vera. Which was great. And so I kind of put it together and just said, you know what, Perf Bites is fantastic. It'll keep going. Leandro in Espanol is great. But I want to maybe start something new with this. And so it has sort of three initiatives around it. You can visit pharmacology.com to check it out. But it was really done very closely with Eric Pregler, Andrew, yourself, Roger, I think, joined up from Abstracta. But it was the sort of Whopper and Uruguay crowd that I just, the first friends that I invited to come start brainstorming about it, is the study of performance generally, ecology, right? Geology, any ology in Latin would be pharmacology. But it's also studying it with the focus or context of, hey, should we do something that's more conscientious about heat and cooling and the energy ecology component? So it's right now, it's just a GitHub project. I won't say just, but we're hoping to create open source certification for somebody in the world who's inspired and excited about performance, maybe a long-term practitioner or just new to saying, I really like this load testing performance stuff. How do I become certified? And so much of the certification in our industry and our discipline is tool specific and it's very closed. So I can get certified in Dynatrace today. That's great. And I can then get a job because certification is most often about employment and credibility in that way. But the clout or the power of my certification comes from the vendor of that tool, the creator of that tool. So industry and in performance, there's no sort of industry or open way of saying where you could go get, you can get your Cisco CCNA. Again, it's the most predominant network certification you can get, but it's sort of specific to Cisco. It's not specific to Cisco, but it's sponsored by Cisco. So anyway, there was nothing in the performance world that said, hey, you are just a pharmacologist. And then I also thought, talking with Eric, we don't have an open source certification model where the power or the clout of that certification is driven from the community, driven from the contributor base. So if you went to 25 Whoppers and you knew all of the people and you listened and went through all of the experience reports and you participated and contributed, in a way, going to Whopper, as you remember in Uruguay, there was the topic, but then the conversation that went on for hours and hours was like, it was a small team, but it was a very open conversation about, hey, this whole experience report really turned into something more inspiring and more educational and more expansive. And it became a stronger understanding for everyone based on the impetus of a single experience report. And I thought, that's kind of a model that you could do certification on. So we're just getting started brainstorming the idea of what could be open source certification with experience reports kind of as the driving model for how you would obtain certification. So one example could be FIDE. You want to become a performicologist only because it's the greatest title ever made. But also it's like, all right, maybe as a community, we decided you need to submit 3 experience reports to a pull request into the repo. Here's FIDE's 3 experience reports. One is focused on database optimization, and there's some expectation that you've read a bunch of things. I want to contribute an experience report, and here's all of my thinking in that experience. And then you have upvotes, downvotes, whatever, from the community to say this person has done 3 experience reports in 3 totally diverse areas. And maybe they're ecology-minded, maybe they're not, but they should all sort of have a little of that in there. And then that is the means, we don't know yet, but maybe that's the means by which you finally have enough votes where you can call yourself a performicologist at some point. Yeah. So that was the idea. The other thing is the Whopper is a fairly, I don't want to say closed in a negative way, but it's a fairly exclusive kind of event. And it's usually because most people aren't quite the expert nerd level that the rest of us are geeking on for 3 days.
You know, we are organizing a new Whopper in Spanish in Chile this year. And exactly. many people are asking, are you recording the discussions? Are you sharing the results in some way?
Right.
It's something that is of value only for the people coming, right?
Right. And so it's in that regard, part of the other aspects, once you start building experience reports to become the performicology thing, if you contribute your experience report to the repo, we're building a library of fantastic reference material that's searchable, that maybe helps individual practitioners. Hey, I'm using these techniques. You can search through it and say, oh, here's an experience. How did they monitor that? What things did they run into? And start being able to share that experience. And that's a delicate thing, again, around copyrights or if somebody has any of the content materials. But I think we can work through that. Again, an open source model, we could do something with licensing and that kind of stuff. We can figure that out as we go.
I can see also the spirit of the peer collaboration and the peer review that appears in Whopper as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's a third aspect of it, which is simply encouraging people to be a performicologist. You kind of have to commit yourself to the sustainable part of our practices. Like we look at burnout from people who do very, very intense performance work. Maybe they pull all-nighters. I have in my career, I've had 2 or 3 people that just literally work themselves to death and they burn out and they leave the profession. It has a high burnout rate simply because of the intensity of the work and some other sort of dysfunctions in performance being left till the end, last minute. Can you still get it done? The urgency under duress. And so the one thing I think that I get feedback on the most in all of my recent years is thank you for just sharing a video on that topic. I didn't even know how to talk about it. I didn't know how to think about it. I didn't know how to, you know, maybe argue for a better way of working with my employer or with my team. Hey, guys, we could do this differently. You know, hey, should we consider doing a different kind of test? And so the third aspect would just being able to share from the knowledge base or from what we build. I'll continue and encourage other people to have podcasts like this. And the Perf Bits and YouTube channels, and look what Leandro said, producing the materials that actually for free in the open source world, you can go get the tutorials because it's hard to get certified if you don't understand stuff. So you'd have some learning materials to go along with doing your own experience reports. And I think that'll be an important part.
And there is an important difference between the typical material we find about performance, which is the best practices, and I have done this myself, like sharing, these are the best practices, or this is, maybe you find something very specific, how to tune this Kubernetes cluster or something like that.
Right.
But I remember myself thanking you for a perfect video where you explain something related to queues and how to understand queues and how to optimize queues. And this is very applicable to different technologies. And the way of approaching the problem was very interesting. And having this sort of real experience, experience reports in this kind of format can be very useful and valuable for our community.
Yeah, my dream would be that people that are just starting out doing load testing today, but they have an aptitude for it and they have some energy or enthusiasm about it, is to have a path that maybe their employer or their organization or their team doesn't really have a specialized path to do that. And there's very rare organizations that do have that. You can become a consultant and you can, go around and there's a time for that. And I obviously learned a lot being a consultant. But when you're just starting out, my hope is that people would see the performacology path as a way to reach a point where they also know how to speak about the value in many contexts of doing performance work and doing it in a sustainable way and doing it in an ecological way, but also doing it because part of their being seen as growing to an expert, senior level, principal level, performance architect level, and eventually a performacologist, of course. But that we would help people actually develop a strong identity of a career path. Even if they're shifting in different roles, they're still sort of on the focus of, I'm a performance person, and a performance, critical thinking about performance. So that's kind of the other byproduct that I'm hoping to inspire people with by doing it.
Amazing. Mark, I think if there is anyone interested in becoming a pharmacologist.
Yes, it was good.
A professional pharmacologist, I guess they should reach out to you. You are very easy to find on Twitter or LinkedIn.
Yep. Yeah, performacology.com, and you can find us, the link to the GitHub repo is there. It's kind of we're absolutely just getting started there. There's nothing. If you really want to jump in and contribute something, we would welcome your input. Just let me know. That would be kind of cool.
Amazing. Mark, thank you so much for all the conversation. Very engaging and entertaining as usual.
Yeah, absolutely. Muchas gracias, Fede.
I'm looking forward to meet you again here now in Chile this year in the conference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have a great rest of the day. Bye-bye.
You too. Ciao.
See you in the next episode of Quality Transfer.